And at the very end, he got an assault charge and half the parents had to go to court to be eyewitnesses.
If you're in a normal setting in any society, if you say those words to someone straight in the eyes, you're like probably getting punched in the face.
This is definitely a cold take, I think, in the softball world right now. But I'm like... Welcome back to Softball Speakeasy Episode 8. If you're new here, my name is Rain Wilson, and I'm a former Duke softball player turned analyst and broadcaster.
And I'm Kelly Torres, current catcher on the Duke softball team.
Softball Speakeasy is a podcast that will be giving you next level access to Duke's 2024 campaign. We'll be following storylines throughout the college softball season, and we'll aim to give you a behind the scenes look at what it takes to play softball at the Division I level. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about, an epic episode on the way for you all, which brings me to this episode is brought to you by the Softball Sanctuary. If you are a pitcher or a parent of a pitcher, listen up. The Softball Sanctuary's mission is to empower softball pitchers to reach their highest potential. They leverage transparent and scientifically validated training methods to provide comprehensive support to athletes both online and at their gym. By offering quality training programs and products, the Softball Sanctuary strives to enhance not only their on-field performance, but also their overall well-being and confidence. The Softball Sanctuary's commitment extends beyond simply training athletes. They are dedicated to nurturing holistic growth, inspiring them to excel, and fueling the love for the game. And full transparency here, Kelly and I did not get into podcasting to just get sponsors, and like that was not even an expectation of what this was going to be. And we knew if we ever did get a sponsor, if that ever happened, it would have to be with a group of people or a company that we absolutely wholeheartedly believe in. And that is what the Softball Sanctuary is for me. The head man over there is Kyle Brady. He spent some time actually at Duke Softball when I was there, and his training methods and his velo balls in particular, for me, I'm not even a pitcher, so I can't even imagine how much growth I would have had as a pitcher there with him. But those velo balls single-handedly saved my arm, not only increased velo on my arm, even more importantly for us is Kyle is an honest, amazing, smart guy that believes in the holistic approach to an athlete. Like, he's not just trying to get numbers, and he's created something amazing with the Softball Sanctuary. So we're so grateful to have them be our first sponsor of the show. The full product and programming list is dropping this weekend, so stay tuned for next week when we drop a discount code for you all to use to get a discount on their amazing products and programs. You can find more information at thesoftballsanctuary.com, and we will also link that in our bio. But without further ado, let's get into it, all right? So we're going to talk about Duke's series win at Louisville and talk about how they did lose their third game of the year. We'll discuss ACC upsets, preview the huge weekend ahead as Virginia Tech comes to Durham, and finally what the Softballers Anonymous submission of the week and listener questions. So Kelly, you're back from Louisville, Kentucky. You all improved to 26-3 on the year, 7-2 in ACC play. You're right around halfway through the season. So I want to ask you, what are aspects to the Duke softball game, if you will, that you are most proud to look back at as you have just finished this first half of the season?
Can't believe we're halfway done with this year already. But what I'm most proud of for sure is being part of that battery. I mean, lights out, Jayla Wright, Lily Walker, Cassidy Curd, like Danny, Sophie, everyone, that whole battery is just lights out. And I'm just privileged to be a part of it.
Yeah, and you are a huge part of it, Frankie as well. And to be leading the NCAA in ERA is just a testament to how much work that those five pitchers have put in, how much work you put in behind the plate, and Coach Young and Nicole in the bullpen as well. So that's an amazing, amazing feat. And I'm excited to watch them pitch as we go through the second half of the season. But I do want to ask you, what do you all want to improve upon as you head through the second half of the season?
Yeah, second half of the season, I think what we really want to harp on is just being consistent. We always know that we're not going to have our bats hot constantly and all the time, but to just have hard outs and, you know, going up there and like taking your best swing, you know, having that be our new focus is just like do damage.
Yeah.
And I think things will get done because of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm excited to see where the second half of the season takes you because, as you know, every season has its ebbs and flows. Like, no team is going linear throughout the whole year. And even it dates back to the fall, which brings me to my next question. So teams, you know this, teams and lineups on opening day rarely reflect and mirror what they are for the last game of the year. Lineups change. The team is trying to figure some things out. So I want to give you a chance to kind of shout out a teammate or an aspect of y'all's game that maybe, I don't want to say it was a surprise, but something that really just came out and wow, they're playing really well. Does that teammate come up to mind for you, or could you enlighten me on that?
I have a few. So first shout out, I'd say, is Claire Davidson.
Yeah.
I think this year Claire has just stepped up, and throughout the whole season, we can talk fall, we can talk spring. Like, Claire really showed out this year, and that's been great to see. I also think Giselle Tapia. Yeah. She's been, you talk about lineup move, and you see her at five, you see her at nine, then you see her at one last game. And it's just someone who is put anywhere and everywhere and doesn't complain once and just, okay, that's where I'm at for the day and I'm going to get the job done. So I hats off to Giselle. That's really hard to do, is just moving up and down and back and forth. So
G, as you know, being her teammate, I was lucky enough to be her teammate for a couple of years. She's just a professional. Like, if there was an MLB of softball, I'm picking her in the first five rounds, that's for sure. But you spoke on how G moved up and down the lineup in the series against Louisville. So I want to dig into the Louisville series, because you walk away with a series win, but that really doesn't tell the whole story at all. So game one, you all rallied in the top of the seventh inning in a game that, honestly, Zabala, the pitcher at Louisville, was dicing it up. I mean, she could locate all four quadrants that game, but you all found a way to win. Take me through that game.
Yeah, Zambala threw a great game. Balls were placed well. I mean, the bottom of the strike zone, then she was able to throw her rise into righties, also was getting lefties on the outside part of the plate. So she was just placing balls well. But you always love a rally win, you know, when both teams are playing well and just like outs are being made and both defenses are playing well, it's who's going to make the first mistake or who's going to find the hole first. Mm-hmm. And that game, I mean, it was us. It was Duke. We won that game. Jayla threw an amazing game. Frankie caught an amazing game. It was solid. Like I said earlier, hitting could have been a little better. We could have made adjustments earlier. But again, I rather make those mistakes now. You know, we're going to have ups. We're going to have downs. So running into those issues now in the middle of the season, we dropped a game, but we learned from it. And hopefully that will save us from when we experience the same thing come ACCs in the tournament.
Yeah, and I think it's a testament to the team and program that Duke is now that you all did not have your best weekend by any stretch of the imagination. You all knew that, and you still came away with a series win against a great team. I'm going to zoom you out a little bit, because you've had, you know, that was, I think, your third time going to Louisville. Is that correct?
Yeah, third time.
So third time, right? And the first time you went, we were teammates, and it was one of the worst weekends, I would say, morale-wise, that I had ever had in my career. It was probably definitely the worst weekend that year, and we won't get into the details of that, but basically it was a turning point for us. It was a 90-degree turning point. We were going one direction. We needed to turn it a different one. And then we came back a couple weeks later and won the ACC championship on that field. So that was a high. The 2 weeks prior, that was a low. So I'm wondering where this weekend kind of sits. Is it closer to a high, or is it closer to that low for you all?
It's closer to a low. You know, I think, yes, we took away with a win. We won the series, but we didn't play Duke softball. Yeah. And I think anytime we go on the field and we don't show our abilities, it's not a weekend you want to like look back and be like, yeah, that was awesome. You know, let's be honest, it wasn't. But I do think, like I said earlier, is like, we needed to feel that. We needed to feel kind of in the dumps, you know, to appreciate the high, to appreciate what we are and who we are, and like to give us a little bit of like a kick in our ass. Like, let's go. We can't be complacent.
Yeah. And you're spot on in saying like that needs to happen now. Like, that can't happen in a few weeks, right? Like that the earlier, the better for that moment. But again, going back, like, it just speaks to how good you all are to have a quote-unquote bad weekend and still win a series in the ACC, because as we'll talk about here next, the ACC is stacked and there's a lot of parity. So I'll take you through the ACC weekend. So Florida State over Pitt, they swept Pitt. They were offensive explosion up in Pittsburgh. It also looked freezing. I felt so bad for them. But Boston College over Syracuse, UNC beat Georgia Tech in the series, Notre Dame beat NC State. And then finally, the one I want to pick your brain about is UVA taking down Clemson. So what is your reaction to UVA winning the series against Clemson?
First reaction is, man, I was hoping that game was going to boost up our RPI. That was my first reaction. Second reaction, I'm just like, okay, like what's going on? You know, the big dogs have always been Duke, VT, FSU, and Clemson. And now FSU and Clemson are both not looking their best. So it's like ACC is kind of rocky. Virginia, you know, they came out, they showed out, and they kind of made a mark. And then we're also seeing that with UNC. That's another team that hasn't always been the best, but they're really making their mark. So it's really, I think it's a turning point for the ACC. What teams are kind of falling, what teams are rising?
Yeah, I definitely think it's interesting that UVA took down Clemson. UVA is ranked top 35 in RPI. So it's not like they're 70, 80 or something like that. So I think it speaks more to who UVA is over who Clemson is. I also think for Clemson, this is their wake-up call, right? Like this is going to be their wake-up call throughout the season. And it's fascinating because, like you mentioned, UVA has never been a perennial powerhouse in the ACC. Now they're playing well. And I think in some ways this could help Duke's RPI because you all played them in a series. Mm-hmm. Whereas if their RPI was very low.
It's senior weekend.
Yeah, senior weekend. Shout out. Oh my gosh, that'll be exciting. And so it's I think it's overall a really good thing. And I also watching them, Kel, like they're pretty good. Like they can make some things happen.
I mean,
they've got some good arms. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Coach Harden as well. And obviously Clemson, you'd never want to walk away losing a series. But for UVA, I just think it speaks to the parity. And even looking across the scoreboard of teams across the ACC, there was a lot of victories and series wins I didn't really expect. Today, in preparing for this episode, I was looking at the statistics. And like in a lot of categories, it is all over the place. Like Duke is like right in the middle, like not at the top in offensively. I mean, of course, the ERA is one of the best, but Boston College has a sub 2 ERA as well. So it's interesting to see that how the statistics line up versus, you know, how the rankings line up and things like that. But one team I did not mention when talking about the ACC is the only undefeated team left in the ACC, Virginia Tech, 9-0. And the Hokies are coming down to Durham this weekend. So give me your initial thoughts, mindset on the weekend against Virginia Tech coming up.
Yeah, if I'm going to be honest, there's not a better team to play now, you know, to play after that kick in the butt that we were just talking about. Like, this is our time to like show out, to make our mark, to be like, okay, we kind of were sleeping last week, but like, let's remind you who Duke is. And they're number one. They're number one in the ACC. They're a good team. That's not you know, gonna hold us back. If anything, that's gonna show us more.
Yeah, it's fascinating too because Virginia Tech 9-0, you all 7-2 in ACC play. Like this series has a ton of implications for the ACC regular season championship. And I know, of course, like there's no way you could play harder knowing that. But I gotta imagine it's at least a part of the equation, part of what motivates you throughout the week. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. And the fact that we have warm weather, we're gonna be home, you know, it's Easter, there's gonna be family there. I think it's just gonna play to us because playing in Kentucky when it was freezing and the wind was like 10 miles an hour, we were out of our element. And so we're gonna be in our element, we're gonna face VT. And yeah. If we sweep them, we take number one in the ACC.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And I will be on the call for the Thursday and Saturday game on ACC Network Extra. So tune in to watch Kelly and mute me if you don't want to hear me yap the whole time. But other than the ACC, I want to ask you about another rule change. I know we talked about rule changes a few episodes ago, but this one in particular has got the softball world talking. And I got opinions about it. And it is the leaving early rule. So we talked about the first episode even maybe. And so I'll explain the rule really quickly. But for a pitcher, there's a runner on first base or runner on any base. The runners cannot leave that base until the pitcher releases the ball. So the ball cannot be touching the pitcher's hand. And as soon as that point happens, the runner may leave the base. This year in college softball, it is a reviewable play. And so how it's kind of reared its head is sort of this ace in the hole for coaches or this like little card in their back pocket that they can pull after a big hit. So Arkansas was playing Mississippi State. They're down 4-6, hit a 2-run home run to tie things up. Mississippi State reviews that call. Runner on first left early. Negates the home run. Score stays 4-6 and the runner is out. So I want to ask you as a player, what is your reaction to this rule change?
Well, as a catcher, I mean, I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of, okay, if I know how fast my pop time is and I threw a missile and it got there perfectly, mm-hmm. tag was there, but I mean, like, she wasn't out, that's something that we might want to do a little and check if she left early. Now, mm-hmm. if it's in a situation like you just said and it had nothing to do with a steal and it was just off a hit and the last defense was the other opponent going, hey, let's check her. We have two checks in a game, might as well. Like, what's the harm if she's safe, you know? So, I mean, that's kind of heartbreaking. Imagine you are that runner on first base and mm-hmm. you just left early on a home run. Wow. Mm-hmm. I think I'd crawl in a hole.
Yeah, it sucks. But like, and I, all across Twitter, and this is definitely a cold take, I think, in the softball world right now. But I'm like, okay, that's bad coaching then, or that's bad execution. Don't leave early. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. it's this rule, people want it to be changed next year. They want it to revert back. It's like the solution to this rule is to not leave early. And yes, that might mean catchers throw people out more, but I think that's darn right. We've been living in a world where runners are taught to leave early every single play. And I understand as a fan, like, you don't want to see the two-run home run get taken off the scoreboard. But at the same time, it's a very easy adjustment. Just don't leave early.
It is
very, very easy.
Don't leave early.
That's my take on it. And, you know, a lot of people are very upset about it. But I think by the end of the year, coaches are really going to start harping on their players, don't leave early. And I actually want to ask you, is that something that Coach Young has had a conversation with your runners about? Like, yes. Do not leave early?
Yes. We actually had Claire Steele, and she left early, was called out. And then we had to adjust. We had to adapt. And actually made the first adjustment. They checked her to see if she was leaving early, and she mm-hmm. didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that are just so easy. It's not like something's in the way. It's, you know, it's black and white. If the ball's out of the hand mm-hmm. and, or the ball's not out of the hand and she's off the base, like, that's clear as day on film.
And do you all, because a lot of coaches are now having people in the dugout to look for the other team and have like two people like in, when I was a freshman, we would have like two people stand there. Of course, it wasn't reviewable then, but we were just like curious. One person would clap when the pitcher released and one person would clap when the runner. And so that's how we would do it. But do you all have those people, and who are they?
We don't do the clapping anymore, but it's just people who are, you know, in the dugout. When Frankie's up to bat, I'm the one who usually screams runner, Kyrie, just anyone who's just not on defense at the time. And you know, if you're screaming going before the pitcher released the ball, like, we're just telling our coach, yeah, she left earlier, you know, no, she didn't.
Interesting. So you guys don't have someone that's like looking at the runner, looking at the release and can know it concretely, because it's like, if you know it concretely and you can tell your coach, hey, they left early, then they can review it. Whereas you can waste that call because you only have two challenges a game. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in the postseason. I have a feeling that there's going to be a play in regionals, super regionals, College World Series, where it's going to have a huge effect. And I know that that wasn't the goal of the rule, but I think that doesn't negate the fact that coaches and players alike should just make the adjustment. Like, it's not an excuse. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But our next segment, which now I think we're in our fourth week of doing this, and this submission might be my favorite of Softballers Anonymous. It's what you can submit by heading to our Instagram bio or X bio. Click on our link tree and you'll see a tab for Softballers Anonymous. Click on that and you can write your anonymous wild stories just like this one. So I'll read this one now. It was 14U travel ball and we were playing our biggest rival. It was a chippy game the entire time. But in the sixth inning, one of their players slid into second with her cleats up and took out our shortstop. The parents were going insane, screaming at each other. Then our pitcher hit one of their batters in the elbow and she went down. Their parents accused our pitcher of hitting her intentionally, and ultimately the parents had to be separated. Things kind of calmed down until the very end of the game and we ended up winning. We were going crazy, but after calming down, we went through the handshake line. And at the very end, one of their coaches punched one of our coaches in the face. He got an assault charge and half the parents had to go to court to be eyewitnesses.
Oh my God. I feel like that just took a turn.
It took a turn. It was funny. It's like, I remember there was like a coach growing up, and I want to say his name, but I don't, you know, don't want to put him out in public like that. But I remember, like, the parents were like, yeah, my court date on whatever, like, this completely unrelated to this person who submitted this, because this isn't the same story. But imagine your mom's like, yeah, I gotta go to court date for that travel softball game. I'm an eyewitness. But it's sad to say, but it's actually not that uncommon to see parents get physical with one another at youth sporting events. So what is your reaction to that?
Yeah. I mean, South Florida, anyone in my era, okay, it was like 2010 softball, knows how it was in South Florida. I mean, it was crazy. My parents, I mean, I'm not scared to say it. Like, you think I am this reason for away, it's because of my parents, you know? They would climb fences, you know, everyone in the stands. It would be loud. They would fight with the other parents. But I can't remember a time where I ever got to the point where they needed to physically be pushed apart. So, but there has been a lot of yelling fights where I have seen, and not just my parents or my team, but just like at tournaments in general.
Yeah.
Softball gets heated. I remember vividly the Jacksonville Storm were our rivals, and they were better than us when we first, you know, were starting out. We're Gold Coast. And I can't say if this was 12U, maybe 14s. And they used to do the wobble. They brought out that big ass, you know, boombox speaker, played the wobble before the game, and was wobbling, looking at us in the dugout. We're like, oh my gosh, no way they just pulled out the wobble. And we lost. But we played them all the time. So when we got better and we started to win, and when we won, we used to do the wobble back. But that got the parents so mad. So it's like we had like the wobble off every single time we played each other. We started just wobbling on the field.
One thing that we did in high school is so funny. And this is going to be super on brand for you knowing me, right?
Okay.
Our rival was Lee Davis, and their colors were orange and blue. And leading up to our games against them, I made the team not say their name. We called them the orange team. We refused to call them by their name. And then we wore all black the day of the game because, you know, funeral. Anyway, which that isn't super unique, but yet the orange team. I just remember that. The orange team, not Lee Davis. We'd never call them by their name. And then we finally get to the state semifinals. And our county rival is in the semifinal against us. And, you know, I think early in that game hit a big home run, and our motto that year was let the dogs eat. And so we had dog food in the dugout, and we also had orange crush sodas in the dugout, because like the orange team were crushing the orange sodas on our head, like losing our mind. And it's interesting because it's like, you know, in this Softballers Anonymous talking about like hitting someone intentionally, that just is not a thing in softball. And I want to see what you think. Like, why is that not an unwritten rule of softball where it is in baseball?
You said it earlier. It's because we're so sassy and we have attitudes. Like, to this day in college, we have cheers and I'm just like, man, that it's like when the pitcher throws like a ball and it's super slow, we're like, it ain't got no gas in it. Like, we're just, instead of like hitting each other, we're just like, you throw slow, and we're screaming it to the top of our lungs. So I think we don't hit people intentionally. I don't think there's a team. I've never played on a team that we do, but we will come up with some like cheers. That is just like, if you're in a normal setting in any society, if you say those words to someone straight in the eyes, you're like probably getting punched in the face.
Yes, exactly. And I also think that like softball players don't want to give the advantage. I was a baseball kid growing up, obsessed with baseball. And I remember there was a chippy game and I went up to our pitcher and I was like, and this was, I'm not saying this is right. This was like, I was 11. I was watching baseball up to this moment. And we had the conversation like, should we hit someone in the ribs or something? Because that's what you hear as a kid watching baseball. Yeah. It's like, oh, hit him in the ribs, hit him in the ear. And then we were like, wait, why would we give them the advantage?
You know what I mean? When the catcher's like, that's the sign. Yep. Like, what is that? Exactly. Why did I know that as like a 10-year-old?
Exactly. Because it's like in the culture. But softball is like, why would I put someone on first base and they have the opportunity to score? Like, because... And also, I think that's why you also don't see fights in games or ejections as much, is because like, we don't want to be ejected. Like, we don't even want that to be a possibility. Of course, if someone swings at you, then like, that's a whole different story. But it's interesting because like, the unwritten rules, like if baseball chanted at the pitchers the way that softball chants about air, woo, and like all these things, you know, I love it when you pitch it in the dirt, like all these chants. looking back, you're right. Like, if you take it out of context, you're like, gosh, like that's pretty intense, right?
I know. It is intense. And like at the end, like when I'm hitting, I'm hoping for a ball to be just a smidge inside mm-hmm. to get hit. Like you don't mm-hmm. want to hit girls in softball because that's a free base. I'm not trying mm-hmm. to move out the way. I don't understand why baseball players are like, whoa, and they like do 360s. Like you look at softball, it's just like, if anything, we're leaning into the pitches so we can get on.
Yeah. And it's funny, dude, because I try to convey this to folks who don't watch baseball or softball. I grew up playing baseball, and like, and if you watch Major League Baseball, those guys are very dramatic, like very mm-hmm. like very dramatic. They get hit, they're on the ground. Granted, it's 100 mile per hour fastball. There's a lot of at play, but as a kid, I learned to play that way. So dramatic, like just you know, all the drama in the world. And then you go over to softball, and girls are like, their teeth are coming out. They got hit in the face, and they don't even question whether they go back in. Like it's such an interesting, and I, of course that's not like, I'm not trying to generalize the entire sport of baseball or softball, but I've just found over time that softball players, they just get up and keep going. Like I think of Deja Davis, like her knees are about to break off and she's just not even questioning whether she'd be on the field. And no, not even,
she goes back.
She's also
in.
not showing any type of emotion that she could be hurt, as so that could be an excuse. She's just fighting. And I think that's one of the beautiful parts of our game that I wouldn't say is as ubiquitous in other sports. So I'm biased for sure. But
well, it's funny because when I was a freshman and you used to get hit, Rain, and you used to just sprint down for a space.
Yeah.
And my dad, I don't think you know this, my dad was just like, hell yeah, show that pitcher it doesn't hurt. So when you graduated, no one was doing hard 60s. I'm like, let me start doing the hard 60s. And I kind of took that after you of like, when I get hit, I mean, nothing compares to getting hit by Jayla's drop balls. Let me just mm-hmm. put that out there. She is throwing 70 miles an hour, and sometimes there's a foul tip, which adds velo. So nothing compares to that pain. So when I get hit by a pitcher, it's more of like a, haha, let me show you that your ball, you don't throw that hard and you don't hurt me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Shake it. Don't even think about it. Like sprint down. Don't worry about the arm guard. Worry about that later. No, I'm glad that's continued on. There was a while, there was a compilation of hard 60s. And if for folks who don't know, 60s is the 60 feet from home to first. Yes. As soon as you get hit, hard 60s. If any of our viewers or listeners have a video of them doing hard 60s, send it to us and we'll post it on the Instagram. But speaking of sending us things, we got some listener questions via our email. If you want to submit your listener questions, you can send them to softballspeakeasy@gmail.com. And these are really fun and interesting question. So we'll tackle this one. How did you select your positions? What was it about your positions that suited your strengths so well? Rain has mentioned catching, playing outfield, and third base. Kelly sounds like she's always been a catcher. So what's the story?
Yeah, so I have always been a catcher since I was, I don't know, softball started at 8 years old. But I played every position. I played outfield, third base. When you get to college, it's, you kind of hone in on a position. It's not rare mm-hmm. though. Like Frankie plays outfield and catching. Claire was a pitcher, then went into outfield. So it's not rare to switch and play multiple positions. You Rain, you caught, you played third. But for me, I mean, they saw me. I did start out playing third base when I was a freshman here. I don't know why they didn't, like, I was not a third baseman. I was really a catcher at heart. And then they're like, wait, you catch? And then I was like, yeah. And then they never moved me. So
yeah, it's interesting. Everyone has a very different story. I would say for mm-hmm. girls coming into college, be a utility player, be open to any position. Don't pigeonhole yourself. For me, it was, how did I select? I mean, I started playing baseball when I was super young, and in baseball, I caught, I pitched, you know, you play all those positions when you're less than 12 years old. And then I moved to softball and for a while played shortstop and then played second a little bit. And then it wasn't really third base until high school when our catcher in front of me was a senior and I was a freshman and there was a spot at third. So I went to third and it was great. And then she graduated and I went to catch. And I got to tell you, I think catching is way more fun than any other position I ever played. It's the best position on the field.
A little biased, but I agree.
Yeah, you just have so much like control of the game and you can see the whole game and you can really influence what's happening. And so it's a lot of fun, but you know, obviously a lot of responsibility too. Our next question is, how much notice do you get about the starting lineup? How do you adjust? As a catcher, does Kelly like switching between catcher and DP? DP meaning designated player.
Yeah, that's actually very funny that this comes up because we don't. Like, I have no idea what I'm going to do or what I'm going to play until really the lineup card comes up. Sometimes coach in the pregame meetings like, hey, Jayla, you got it with Frank. You guys are the battery today. But I would say it is a little difficult. I'm not going to not be honest. It is hard when you're grinding, you're trying. But at the same time, Frankie's doing the same and she's an outstanding catcher as well. So I think I'm honestly at a position where it's great to have both people, and it's a great flip-flop when I'm catching, she's DPing. So we're both in the lineup. We're both valuable in that aspect. They both want our bats there. It saves your mind. It saves your emotions. If you're just look, let me just do what's best for the team. Cause that's out of your control. It's out of your control to write yourself into that lineup. So play your role, do the best at what you're given, and opportunities come when it's just your time.
Yeah. And there are certain moments in my career where one of the coaches would come to me and be like, hey, you're going to play right field today. And I was like, okay. Like in those moments, they're trying to give you a heads up so you're not shell shocked, because you're, like Kelly mentioned, you're finding out right before you're out there. So it's... You don't really have time to dwell on it or think too much about it. And then also I think it's okay to be like, no, I want to catch every game. And that's the competitor you are, right? Another point too is Coach Young, probably every single head coach in the country wants players who want to play every single pitch. They don't want kids who are like, oh, I'm cool. Yeah, yeah, you have, go for it. Take my spot, go for it. More like, no, I want to be in there. But if I'm not, I'm going to support the heck out of you and I'm going to contribute to this team in whatever way I can. And that's exactly what you do. Our next question is based on Duke's uniforms. So was it the player's decision to not have the last names on some uniforms is having, quote, Blue Devils on the back of the jersey to make a statement about team first mindset? Who chooses the uni colors for games? What's your fave uni color?
I like the black funeral vibes. I love the black. We're going to kill. That's the vibes I get when I put that jersey on. But we do not get to choose when our last names are on the jersey or what colors we get to wear. We're given a list to what to pack, and we just kind of walk into the locker room and see what jerseys are in our locker for the weekend. I don't know the thought behind the what jerseys have our last names and which jerseys have, Blue Devils. So it's actually a very thought-provoking question because I never thought
of that. Do you guys have any jerseys that are your last names?
Yeah, our blue jerseys have our last names on them.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's because there was not enough money to have everyone have custom jerseys back in the day. I think maybe as time moves on, you will have it every game, but it's nice that y'all are advancing to the point where you have your names on the back of your jerseys. That's really cool. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Well, that is all of the listener questions we have for the day. Thank you all so much for watching, listening, viewing, and subscribing. Please follow us at SB Speakeasy on all platforms. And as always, if you're feeling kind, please rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. That means the absolute world to us. And as a reminder, we are a part of the Softball America Podcast Network. So if you want a full list of podcasts and softball content, you can head to Softball America on YouTube, like and subscribe that page because it is a wealth of information and really fun content that we're very, very excited and very grateful to be a part of. If you want to watch Duke take on Virginia Tech this week, I'll be on the broadcast. It'll be on ACC Network Extra on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Happy Easter to all those who celebrate on Sunday. And without further ado, we will see you next week on the show. Peace.